up, everybody? Welcome to Caffeination 223. This is the Right Stuff edition here. Right as in to inscribe, to put down upon paper with pen, any one of those things particularly. But hopefully you're going to enjoy today's show. We have a great amount of stuff for you today. It's going to come fast. It's going to come hard. This is the Caffeination Podcast. We are highly caffeinated right now, and we are juiced to send this show right to you. The Caffeination Podcast can be found over at www.caffeination.com. That's caffeination.com, surprisingly enough. And we also happen to be a proud member of a couple different organizations that I think you might be interested to know about. The first and primary of which being the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here, and all the other member shows have agreed to create child-safe, family-friendly, and educational content, and they all live over at techpodcasts.com. We're also a proud member of the Blueberry Podcast Network, BLUBRRY, and we are a Puzzle Piece production. To find out more about what that means, check on over to puzzlepiecepro.com. Right, all right, everybody, this is going to be a great show. Like I said, we are chock full of content. Literally, I have to scroll several times before I can get everything onto my browser window. This could be or could not be a very good thing. First off, just wanted to give you a little bit of an information on why we're calling this show The Right Stuff, and I do have to send a big thank you out there to all of the people who've been reading the blog lately. Yes, we're updating it almost every day. The only day that we do not promise an update is on Saturdays, so 6 days a week you're getting a new article up there. It's about all the different topics that we cover on the Caffeination. Some of it's new stuff, some of it's straight out of my head, other stuff's, you know, just pulling interesting links from around the internet and letting you see them and play with them. But I gotta tell you, thanks to you and thanks to the constant need to continue to write and everything, I've started to actually get back into writing a project that had been by the wayside for a long time. So if that actually comes to fruition and I actually do finish my first book, I will point you all over to where it ends up. I'm not sure if I'm gonna do like an audiobook thing where I'm gonna read it. I don't know if my voice would be able to accurately convey that, or I might just, you know, just try and do the traditional thing and send it out to a publishing house. Who knows? The sky's the limit here. But, you know, thanks to the opportunity presented by the Caffeination Podcast and the blogging that I'm doing over there, I think my writing has improved significantly, and the thoughts are starting to come freer now. So it's a very creative time here at the podcast. And speaking of creative times, you are going to hear about a whole bunch of crazy stuff on today's show. You're going to hear about coffee, composting, monkeys, sea monsters, greed, green living, and the Philadelphia Phillies, the baseball team. There's a whole bunch of interesting stuff, like I said, on today's show. And but before we get too much further, we did want to talk to you just a little bit about the sponsor for today's show. When you meet with colleagues or clients in person, you end up spending a fortune on gas or airfare and waste time in traffic, airports, and hotels. All that waste for just a two-hour meeting. This problem will not trouble you any longer. Just do more and travel less. Hold a meeting online from your computer and the safety of your own couch with GoToMeeting. Everyone logs on to GoToMeeting.com during your conference calls and sees your computer desktop on all of their monitors. Get more done in less time without the hassle of driving or flying. Try GoToMeeting free right now for 30 days. With this special offer, just visit GoToMeeting.com/techpodcasts. That's GoToMeeting.com/techpodcasts to get your free trial today. We'd like to thank GoToMeeting for being a continued sponsor here at the Caffeination Podcast. They're really good people. They've treated us very well, and we'd like to thank them repeatedly, and hopefully you can head on over there and try their product out. Look, I wouldn't shill for a product if I didn't like it, you know what I mean? I've tried it before. We've done the roundtable discussions over at techpodcast.com, and I really enjoy using it. It makes everything that much simpler when you're working around. So before we get too much farther, we have three main sections on today's show. We have the Real News Bites, the Tech Cruft, the Caffeine and Food. I mean, it is all coming to a head, but we did want to remind you that April 15th is Adopt-a-Noob Day. So all of you technologists, you techie people out there, you need to pay your taxes by April 15th, but you also need to pay your dues. There's somebody out there who has helped you in the past, who has helped you down that road, might have given you an answer when you needed it or something like that. Share the wealth, pay it forward, teach a man or a woman to tech. It's your civic duty at this point in time, I like to think. This is the third annual Teach a Man to Tech Festival, basically, the Adopt a Noob Day. We might end up changing the name of it next year to that, because I like that a little bit more, kind of flows, but, you know, we're just trying to do it. So if you blog about it, if you write about it, if you do anything like that, if you have a podcast and you start talking about it, please feel free just to post it as Adopt a Noob 2008 or AND 2008, or just shoot me an email and say, hey, you know, I like it, I don't like it, but here's what we did. You know, so there's already a couple people out there who are trying to do it, and so hopefully it'll catch on. Every year, little by little, it's getting better, so that's what we strive for here. Just same with every episode we do for you. Just little by little, we like to try and make it a little bit better for you. The first little article I had up here is actually an article I wrote, which is a little interesting thing, at least I think it's interesting, all about the vampire electronics that are in your house. And basically, it breaks down the way to try and save yourself a little bit of cash. You know, we live in a very green environment right now, and green is such this hip buzzword. And I hate using buzzwords on one end because, you know, it makes everything I say seem really trite, if that's all you're talking about. And trite in and of itself is a buzzword at times. But at the same point in time, you bring more people in if you're using the buzzwords. You bring more people to the same understanding. So when you say green tech right now, everybody understands that you're environmentally conscious. We are back in that grand cycle of things where it's hip to be, you know, a hippie at this point. So, you know, for those of the people who are taking care of the planet and trying to pay it forward that way, you know, this is the time to shine right now, you know. But basically the idea behind my article here is kind of to identify and pick out the different things which do and do not need to be plugged into your house. And I don't have any empirical data from my specific house because this is something I'm trying to do now. And basically the main tip I give you in the article is basically you gotta make big lists of all the stuff in your house. Find one big list and put all the things that you plug in your house. Every single thing from car charger, cell phone chargers to mobile phones to everything else. Plug, you know, one list of all the stuff plugged in. Then make a second list, and I'm guessing it's going to be a little bit smaller, of all the stuff that's, you know, very necessity. It's a necessity in life. You know, things like the refrigerator and, you know, your alarm clock so you're on time for work and things like that. And then you try and find a different way and balance it out between the two lists. See what you can cut off from power when you're not home, like the computer, like the Xbox, or whatever else you happen to have. So, I mean, there's a couple other tips in there. There's a great link to 20 fabulous articles on green tech from Lifehacker over in the article, so you can check that out at caffeination.com. Now we're going to head on into the meat and the potatoes, the real news bites here at the Caffeination Podcast. The first thing up here is actually a horrifying story. I don't know if anybody out there has low self-worth. If you don't think that you yourself are worth very much, well, I'm not going to be able to help you here. Even the people who have high self-worth, guess what? You're not worth that much. ID thieves are selling your ID on the cheap. Now, this is a little bit of yellow journalism. This is a little bit of, you know, throwing gas on the flames, but it, you know, it kind of needs to be slapped around every once in a while. There's a, you know, Symantec basically put out a report, the Internet Threat Report, and before you take that into consideration, what they said, you know, whatever they said, you have to realize that Symantec thrives on fear. McAfee thrives on fear. All these companies make money off the fact that you are afraid of getting a virus. They are the home alarm salesman of the internet. You know, we once talked to a home alarm guy who said, you know, I really hope you don't get broken into. And I just looked at the guy and said, are you kidding me? You hope I don't get broken into. It sounds like a veiled threat, and in some cases it is. But the thing is, with you know, computer security and everything, it's much more of a real threat, depending on your neighborhood. But you know, there's stories out there, like the horror stories of you know, the average lifespan for an unsecured Windows XP machine just online without Service Pack 2, you know, just restored to factory settings, is 2 minutes before it's infected. That's with you doing nothing. That's not surfing the internet. That's not doing anything. That is a mind-numbingly quick period in time. That's almost not enough to get, you know, the really crucial updates. In fact, that's not enough to get the really crucial updates. But that aside, here's the list of prices, and then we'll move on. But basically, if you want somebody's full identity, which I'm assuming is probably, you know, name, address, social security number, whatever else it happens to be, you know, you're looking to spend anywhere from $1 to $15. That's correct. That's it. That's American, and that's not worth that much anymore. Your email password goes for anywhere from $4 to $30 because that allows them to become you, not only, you know, have all your info, and your bank account might fetch anywhere from $10 to $1,000. This is an article from over at Slashdot, and the funny thing they say, that, you know, basically some of the accounts that you're trying to break into for $1,000 don't have that much coin actually in them. So I just think that's actually kind of funny. But at the same point in time, they're more valuable than just the amount of money that's in them. The amount of access they give to your credit is devastating. And the funny thing is the PDF for the Symantec's Global Internet Threat Report is 105 pages. The quote-unquote executive summary is 36 pages. What, nobody ever heard of bullet points? Come on, this thing should be able to be boiled down into like 2 pages. I know a lot of executives out there who are not going to read 36 pages. If I handed somebody a 36-page executive summary, I'd get fired. And it would be one short little line, you know? So, all right, moving right along. In the same kind of vein, there's this interesting new worm that's out there, and I gotta warn you about it because you're gonna hear about it on the news. I just know you are. It's called the Kraken. You know, yes, that mythical beast that, you know, the mythical, like, squid-like beast that used to come from out of the depths and destroy schooners. And there's a fun company called Dambola Incorporated. Now, they are a botnet research lab, so much like Symantec, you need to take their information with a grain of salt. They have dubbed it the Kraken. They have, you know, very limited information on this thing, and apparently it's invisible to a lot of antivirus programs. It's very good at masquerading itself. That might even infect the actual antivirus program itself. I mean, you never know. But basically, they're saying there's somewhere around 400,000 systems currently that are infected with this thing, and it's twice the size of some of the other large ones. But and they're saying it might end up getting to 600,000 before they really get down to it. It's sending up to 500,000 emails a day. 10% of the Fortune 500 companies are currently infected. So I think it's kind of interesting that, you know, they pick such a an interesting name. You know, I think that the name choice in and of itself is kind of an attempt to really strike fear into people's hearts. Yes, these things are dangerous, but they can all be dealt with. There has not been a virus or a worm or a piece of malware put out that the people on the other side of the coin have not been able to deal with yet. So yes, if you're a security professional, you need to be aware of these things. And I love the response from the ISC, the Internet Storm Center. In case you were wondering, you can find that at isc.sans.org. There's a little light chart up at the top. There's green, yellow, orange, and red. Green is everything's cool, nothing's worse than normal. Doesn't mean it's free and you can run around unfettered, you know, across the internet, but at the same point in time, it doesn't mean that, you know, things are going down and you're going down with it. You know, yellow means you need to be very cautious. Orange means things are going down, we're working on it, and red means put your head between your legs. I've seen it red twice, I think, and I've seen it orange, which is new. No, yellow, it was the old one. Orange is relatively new. I've never actually seen it orange. But, you know, you head on over to that, and if that's orange, yellow, or red, then you're in trouble. Then you can, you know, take a little bit of more time and say, okay, exactly what are we doing on with our entire security infrastructure? But there's a lot of really interesting information. If you're incredibly technologically inclined, if you are a techie, if you're in charge of security for your university, your business, and your university is the first thing that comes to my mind. It's where I work. But it's a relatively new piece of malware that's out there. You know, most of the information is available since 4/07. So this episode's being recorded the 9th of April, and there's a lot more information that's kind of floating around. They're updating it as they go. And apparently it seems to be a relatively tiny sized file. So, you know, we'll see exactly where this goes from. And like I said, the information that's over at isc.org is stuff that's beyond me. Not saying that I'm like incredibly technical, but looking at this stuff, I don't know what some of it means. So if you're, you know, an Uber hacker, if you're an Uber security geek, then you might want to head on over there and check it out. But if not, you know, just take it with a grain of salt. do everything you're doing. You know, don't click on images and links and stuff that you don't know where they're from. And just, you know, mind yourself, and you'll be fine. All right, moving right along, because we spent a little bit more time on it than I really wanted. Sweden has a fun new thing coming out. They're doing green garbage trucks. Yes, you heard me correctly. These are the first hybrid refuse trucks in the world, apparently. And the funny thing is, I would have sworn that these kind of things would have been in operation in someplace like San Francisco. I mean, San Francisco has like the all-electric bus fleet, and it's kind of interesting because so it can, you know, it can it saves emissions on trash trucks of up to 20%, and that's all city driving. I mean, that's, you know, stop and go every like 20 or 30 feet, and you know, I really think that that's one of the big red flags for, you know, living in big cities. Like there are infrastructural needs that are very, very taxing on the carbon footprint, as the case may be. You know, things like garbage trucks, things like you know, public transportation, things like you know, police vehicles and snow plows and stuff like that. And that's one of the places that I'm surprised that a lot more focus hasn't been put on. Now, I'm pretty sure we might actually get a couple people sending us links into, okay, you know, here's a hybrid police car, and there's a bunch of really cool stuff coming out. And I'm waiting for the link to pop up in Wired, but there's a new redesign police car that's going to be like fantastic, and it's going to be a hybrid and all the other kinds of crazy stuff. But I need to find the link to that, and I'll post that in the next show. But it's just kind of cool, and you know, kudos to Sweden for this. They had a concept vehicle out in 2006. This is the first fully functional, operational, and apparently all systems go 2008. So you know, this is new. This is from Volvo, so you know, it's boxy but good. But still, it's kind of cool, kind of interesting to see that kind of thing flowing around. All right, next little thing we have up again in Real News Bites, still there. E-voting are real results. Basically kind of picking apart what everybody with half a brain would have thought so far. E-voting is driven entirely by one thing. It's not driven entirely by the good-natured civic need to help better the system of electing individuals. No. It is driven by plain cold hard cash. And this is just an interesting story from over at Ars Technica, and it basically details all of the different amounts of money spent in different municipalities throughout the United States. They pick on the Maryland School Board annual election budget, and it's just insane the amount of money that gets poured into these machines. And it's been since the 2001 election, because there was this massive push away from physical means of counting votes towards electronic means. And all these you know, open source communities and everything else like that, they come out and they say, oh, you know, why not have an open source voting system? Because it's not profitable. The company's not going to do it if nobody can make some coin on it. It might be intelligent, it might be the right way to go, and it might be, you know, it might make sense to everyone who ever thought of it to have a very open and very transparent system. But the people who are counting the coin, the people who are working on that money, are not going to go for it because there's very little revenue involved in that. So, you know, the government really needs to kind of take a step back and say, hey, what exactly are we spending all this money on? What are the returns that we're being given? And is it actually working? Because if it's not working, I'd rather go back to the paper system. I mean, yeah, it's not very environmentally friendly, but you can recycle the ballots. You can recount the ballots. I mean, there's no mysticism in that. You know, the ballots go into the box, and everybody who's already, you know, found a way to tweak the election is going to continue to do so. So, I mean, I don't like the whole new way of tweaking the elections. And just for a lark, there's two fun little one graphic and one awesome video from The Onion. The video from The Onion basically says the Diebold messes up and releases the results of the election early so that our shadowy puppet masters have actually been outed. The other one's like a fun little graphic and says basically they did a little poll, you know, one of their completely false polls, but still nonetheless. And apparently 83.6% of the people polled say there's a greater chance that we'll be electing a robot president with computerized voting. So just kind of funny, kind of cool, nonsensical, and awesome all in the same thing. And the last little thing we have here in Real News Bites before we move right along is free Photoshop. I haven't talked about it yet, and I've gotten a little bit of heat from a couple people. They said, well, why didn't you talk about this? You know, it's free. It's really useful to everybody. Yes, I understand that, but you do understand there's a major, major catch associated with free Photoshop. I am, of course, talking about Photoshop Elements. I think that's, or no, sorry, Photoshop Express. Photoshop Elements is a smaller, lighter weight version that's less expensive than Photoshop, which is something like $800 or $900 US. So Photoshop Express is this online website basically that allows you to upload work and do Photoshop style work to pictures and information online. Do your design, do the you know, everything. You know, I think it's even attached to a printing service at one point in time. I'm not using it. And the reason I'm not using it is because the first end user license agreement that was associated with it basically said Adobe could do whatever they wanted to your content if they wanted to. They owned it. As soon as you uploaded it, or if you created it with their application, it was theirs. They can take it and they can run. Now the new end user license agreement's up there, and basically they have all the legalese in there still, but they've changed things around. They've actually put some real world information in there, you know, like words that people would normally understand. And it says, you know, with respect to your content, you grant Adobe a worldwide, because the internet is global, royalty free means they don't owe you any money, non-exclusive, which means you can sell the stuff after the fact, fully sublicensable, which means that we can permit anybody that they ever talk to use your stuff. They can reproduce, modify your content solely for the purposes of operating the service and enabling your use of the service. So they're saying that through the, you know, if you upload your stuff to it, they can redistribute it both as propaganda for the use of the service and anybody who uses them or as a or anybody who they designate as a subcontractor can work within your documents to troubleshoot and modify and fix things on the service. So it's much less of a toothy end user license agreement, but still I like owning my content, and as long as it's on my machine and as long as it's not going anywhere, if I feel really paranoid that day, you know what I can do? I can unplug the machine from the internet. I mean, there's nothing else stopping me. There are a couple different limits on the information when you share a piece of work that you've done. You can publicly share it, a la Flickr, just a little bit. You can grant the rights to personal informational non-commercial use. You cannot rent, sell, or lease the license of shared content to others, which I don't understand, because if you created it, you should be able to actually sell or lease shared content to other people. You can't modify somebody else's stuff. You cannot remove text, copyright, or proprietary notices contained in other people's stuff. And when you embed stuff on web pages from the shared content service, you have to send a link back to the page. Pretty much standard operating procedures there, but still kind of wanted to let you know, because there's a lot of people out there who saw this and jumped right on the bandwagon. And while there is no nothing saying that they're going to do it, and there's very little empirical evidence to the fact that they're going to use your work in a way that's going to make you lose money, you know, it's better to be safe than sorry in this day and age, so we're just going to let that sit there. All right, moving right along from the Real News Bites, a lot of really cool stuff here. We have a little bit of tech, or a decent amount of tech cruft, and then we're going to head on into the caffeine and food section and get you on out of here. Hopefully you're enjoying today's show. Let's see what we got here. All right, up first in tech cruft, apparently there's a new video game coming out called Battlefield Bad Company. That doesn't mean anything normally, and it's one of those things that, like cell phones, that I usually don't talk about a lot. However, there is one kind of interesting thing about Battlefield Bad Company. They allow the buying of weapons within the game for use in online play with real money. So basically, the people, just like in real life, the people with more money are going to have the better toys. The people with more disposable income are going to end up walking away. And they say there's no disparity between the levels. Every test out there has shown that you're not going to spend money unless you gain some kind of advantage. And so there's two different schools of thought on this. The one is, if it's a good game, buy it and play it. Do not purchase the content, because if you don't purchase the content, then they're not going to make it available. The second school of thought is to not buy the game in the first place, because you don't agree with the idea that there should be that different level within the game. And you know what? I'm actually part of the second group here. I don't think that people should be buying the game. If this is something you don't think that that is a good thing. You should probably hold off from buying the game just because there is not going to, you know, they're not going to worry about a dollar or two or three of missed revenue. They're going to worry about the $60 you didn't spend, and they're going to be curious as to why the game didn't do as well as it could. And last little bit of gaming news before we head deeper and deeper into the TechCraft section, because I know we don't have a lot of gamers that maybe listen to the show. There's a different amount of this, and this is more of an economic posting than something about gaming specifically. There's a game that I haven't bought. Now, a lot of people I know are really interested in the game, but they can't justify it to themselves to spend the amount of money for it. In U.S. dollars, the game costs $169.99. This game is called Rock Band. It's something similar to Guitar Hero, in which you can play all the different songs that are out there, and it comes with a guitar, a drum set, and a microphone, all of which allow you to be a faux rock star, as the name may imply. However, if you were to it's now being released for Europe, and if you were to apply the conversion rate with what it's being sold for in the UK and what it's being sold for in the rest of Europe, both in euros and in pounds, this is what it would cost in American dollars. So the game in America costs $169.99. In Britain, it would cost you the equivalent of $345.40 for the game and the three instruments. And in the rest of Europe, it's going to cost you $376.76. Look, I know the dollar is weak, but this is insane. I mean, I know that there's other countries out there that when games get released there, they face a higher licensing fee for different parts of the content and everything like that. But that's absurd. There's no way I can in any way actually say, yeah, this is a really good idea. I can understand why it would cost more. I mean, maybe if they were only making the game in one particular location, if they had to pay four times the licensing fee to use Born in the USA as the UK as they do here in the United States, but I mean, I could almost see it. I mean, I think licensing fees, are generally overblown anyway, but I mean, that's over double the price of the game, I think. I mean, that's just ridiculous. So we're moving right along here. What else do we got? All right, and kind of an interesting little one-off that I found over at TrendHunter.com. This looks to be the pearl-handled pistol of this modern century. My father actually has a gun in his basement. I think it's still put together. I'm not really sure. It's a 22 caliber, I think, pearl handled pistol that was originally made in the 1860s. And this gun was supposed to be used by women and carried in their purse. And it was very pretty looking. Nowadays guns aren't very socially acceptable, especially since they can go off and there's all kinds of bad things that can happen when they do. However, so women have turned to mace, and mace is or is not effective. Now they're turning to personalized tasers or stun guns, especially ones that look like different kinds of objects. So now you have a rechargeable stun gun that looks like a tube of lipstick. I'm pretty sure most muggers are going to be a little bit suspicious when they see a 2-inch metal tube coming at them, and it doesn't have the ability to actually fire the little tongs into them like other stun guns do. But it is kind of an interesting idea on one hand. It's a very safety-conscious thing, but at the same point in time, I could imagine reaching into your purse to look for something and coming out with a 350,000-volt surprise when all you were looking for was a Kit Kat. So, just kind of thought it was interesting, thought I'd pass it along to you. All right, the next little thing we have up here is actually the internet and the Phillies have rickrolled the New York Mets. The New York Mets held this fun thing online where they were allowing people to pick the eighth inning song that was going to be playing, and due to a couple different social websites, Fark.com and a couple of the different Phillies blogs, they all suggested to go over there and write in Rick Astley's Never Gonna Give You Up. Guess what? It won, and it was played at the home opener, and they kind of tried to lessen the blow by saying that they were going to play all five of them, one a week for the first week of the season, then whichever one got the most in-stadium votes. There's a bunch of videos floating around, but the problem is the Major League Baseball is actually using the DMCA law to shut down the videos, saying that they have the rights to any and all things that involve baseballs. So, there you go. I thought it was funny, and I don't really like the Mets very much, so I thought it was even better. I'm all for monkeys. I like monkeys in general, but I don't think they should be used as children. Apparently, there's this little article out there that says a lot of empty nesters are actually starting to adopt monkeys in replacement of their children. They're called monk kids, and yeah, I can't make this up. They're refusing to call them pets. They're carrying miniature primates around, and there's all kinds of strange things that are associated with this. So I just thought I'd pass it along in case you happen to be looking for a monkey. You can talk to these people. And then the last little thing we have here in TechCruft is from a wonderful website called Dark Roasted Blend. Wonder why we picked that one. But it's a fun collection of different barcode art. And the barcodes are actually going away. They have that new weird-looking thing that's been on UPS packages for a while. But I never really thought of the barcode as an actual opportunity to be artistic. But you know, this collection is proving me wrong in spades. From the city that's made out of the barcode to a gentleman trying to lift one, somebody, a scorpion cutting through a zippered version of one, you really have to check it out. I was hoping that there'd be some kind of barcode generator over there to allow you to include your own little artwork, but no dice on that one. All right, moving right along, we have the caffeine and food section, and this is going to be four quick little things, and then we will head you right on out the door. All right, Starbucks brand maintenance. Apparently, for those of you not in the know, Starbucks recently released a new blend, basically to try and soothe the general perception that their coffee is burnt. I have one feeling on it, and I know a lot of other people who have other feelings on it, but basically I always thought that it's not that the coffee was too dark roasted for me, it's that it was actually physically burnt. It felt like it had been sitting there in the drip pan. The thing that I'm actually really happy about is that they're moving back to grinding the coffee in the stores. They had been using the vacuum-packed coffee for the longest time, and I really like the idea that they're actually, you know, trying to look back at it and really put more attention to detail into the actual work and say, you know what, people are coming in for the coffee and they're coming in for the experience. So part of the experience is good tasting coffee. So one of the ways that we can improve the taste, coffee always tastes so much better when you grind it fresh. So if you have not done that so far, I highly suggest you try grinding the coffee and then brewing it right after the fact. I can almost guarantee you that you are not going to ever want to go back to the pre-ground, pre-packaged stuff after you tried that, especially if you ever actually give in to temptation and try the fresh roasted stuff. So, all right, moving right along. Next little thing we have up here is kind of an interesting dual-purpose item. It's both a bangly thick bracelet and a coffee koozer in one. I like the idea of dual-purpose bracelets. Basically, this thing is a solid wooden sleeve, which fits around most standard size coffee cups. The only problem with this thing is it's a design object. And yes, it's very interesting looking. It might not be the best bracelet around, but it does serve a function, and you can almost say, you know what, this makes a really good idea. However, $68 Canadian is way too much to pay for a piece of wood, even one as finely crafted as this that goes around my cup of coffee. I will either have one of those the extra coffee koozers, I'll cut up a beer koozer and put it around my wrist, I don't care how bad that looks, but or I'll just use the wonderful free sleeves that they now provide with all of them, and I'll recycle them after the fact. I mean, that's pretty much what they were meant to do. I like the idea, it's they need to bring down the price to get me really interested. All right, and then the last little thing that we have for today's show is the perennial favorite of springtime coffee, compost. A lot of people out there talk about whether or not they can use coffee in their gardening, and I use coffee to water all of my office plants, and I have a veritable kudzu growing in my office. Things are all over the place. They're very, yes, coffee is acetic, so if you have things like azaleas or stuff like that, then coffee loves it. We also use coffee as kind of a bug deterrent, a pest control in our garden, because it does actually control slugs and a couple other different kinds of pests. But I linked three articles up here, and the first one's basically an interesting little overview of what you can find in compost for coffee and whether or not it's really acetic. The second one is a fun little article on the an interesting product called Grojo, which is a man who decided to take his used grounds and turn them into actual fertilizer, and he actually ended up selling his cafe called Cool Beans. He actually lived in Pennsylvania, and decided to build an entire business around this. And then the last little things that linked directly to the guy's stuff. So if you'd like to help, you know, save coffee grounds from the landfill, you can head on over there and check that out. I mean, I really like the idea. I use coffee coffee grounds, like I said, in all of my potting mixtures. They have really retained moisture really well. They are a little bit acidic, so if you have something that needs more of an alkaline soil, you might not want to go with that, or you could just use something to kind of balance it out. Apparently, Joe used a ground limestone or a couple other different things in there. But I got to really hand it to him. He has three different products. The powder, which is basically the fertilizer mixture. He has liquid, which is the liquefied stuff. And he also has injected resin-coated pots that you actually put the entire pot in the ground. And unlike the other fibrous pots that are out there, you know, it actually allows you it fertilizes the pot as it goes, which is really cool, really kind of interesting. And I'm going to have to really check out more about that. But that pretty much wraps up today. And today, it being Caffeination 223, this was recorded live to Hard Drive Direct on April 9th, 2008. If you'd like to contact me, you can do so at caffeination@gmail.com for all of your comments, feedback, suggestion, hate mail, or whatever else you'd like to throw my direction. This has been the Caffeination Podcast, like we said before. If you'd like to find this episode and all the other episodes like it, you can head on over to www.caffeination.com. That's caffeination.com. And thanks for listening, everybody. Stay caffeinated, people.